Hi, it's Dave. Welcome. Today, I'm joined by Farzad Misbahi. He has a YouTube channel on Tesla. He goes by Farzad and also many different names. Every drive-through he goes through, they give him a different name, I hear. How's it going, sir. Farzad?
It's going great, man. It's very good to have you back posting again, man. It's been so cool seeing the string of videos. I know a lot of us miss your content. I know there's a lot of stuff going on too on your personal life, and hope everything's okay. And thank you for taking the time to speak with me, man. It's an honor to be on your channel as always.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Last week I went to the shareholder meeting and I met a bunch of people face to face, and it really just kind of brought home the profound nature of kind of media and YouTube and relationships. And so I'm like, wow, I need to share a bit more. And so the past week I've been pumping out some videos. Awesome. I wanted to talk with you because there's so much going on, and it's just fun to talk about some of this stuff. But we've got the shareholder meeting from last week. We've got kind of this whole reinvigorated Elon Musk with this Master Plan 4. We've got FSD and Optimus and lots of things floating around. But first off, let's see what happened in your view with the shareholder meeting last week. Like, how significant was this vote to reapprove Elon's compensation plan and move to Texas? Like, in the bigger picture, you know, of things, like, how important was the shareholder meeting and this vote?
Yeah, in my opinion, it was, you know, it was pretty significant. Especially the compensation vote, in my opinion, right? And I've been trying to, you know, in the weeks and months up to the vote, I was really trying to get my head wrapped around what's the likelihood of this thing actually passing. Because the one thing I kept running into, the wall I was running into, is I couldn't, my personal sort of process and my belief system and how I approach the vote, I couldn't conceivably come up with a reasonable reason to vote no. And it was mainly because I think the ethical aspects of the vote would have made it so that I think Elon Musk, the CEO of Tesla, I'm sure if people, you know, if they're not familiar with the story, but if shareholders would have voted no, I think it would have left a very sour taste in his mouth. And I think it would have jeopardized his likelihood of being at the company long term, because I think the thought process would have been, you know, I worked 5 years or 6 years, however long it's been, on this comp plan that shareholders approved, and then y'all voted no, and then a lot of you voted yes and then voted no. And so what does that make me? A sucker working for free, right? And I think, and you know, it doesn't matter how much, what percentage of the company he has or whatever, I think there is something to be said about a human being working, completing a contract and then not being compensated for that contract, and then the people you work for get compensated because of the returns on the stock, right? So from that standpoint, I thought it was extremely important, but I also thought that most people would find that to be the case, that I think most people would come up with a reasonable conclusion that says, regardless of the administrative issues that the judge in Delaware came up with, you know, which I don't think it should have rendered the comp package rescinded, but we'll set that aside. Most people would come to the conclusion. So I was quite confident the vote was going to pass. And so in the grand scheme of things, this is what ended up happening. It was a predictable outcome, but the no vote, I think, would have been a huge deal. And then moving to Texas, I think it says more about Delaware, in my opinion, than it says about Tesla's ability to get stuff done. And I'd love to hear your opinion on this, because to me, it's like, okay, now you're moving to a state that perhaps is going to be friendlier to you, but Elon and the Tesla team seem to be very good at figuring out ways to get stuff done. So where they get stuff done from, I think if one buys the sort of thesis that says Delaware might have a business environment that might be unfriendly to somebody like an Elon Musk, then I could see how that's beneficial because there's less distractions. But I think in the grand scheme of things, the comp package is a bigger deal, in my opinion, than the move to Texas. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I thought this voting was very, very interesting because the amount of retail investors now that are in Tesla stock is so significant that I think if retailers didn't make up as much of, you know, the shareholder base, if we had, like, let's say 80% or something institutional, then I think institutionals, to me, they're more a bit traditional. They're not really in the stock. They might be holding it for different reasons. They might be part of an index fund, et cetera. And I could see them voting no more than a Tesla retail shareholder who's in the stock because they believe in Elon Musk, they believe in the future of Tesla, of FSD and Robotaxi. So this vote was significant, in my opinion, because it reaffirmed to everybody, including the institutional shareholders, that the future of Tesla is in Elon Musk and it's with FSD and Robotaxi. Like, for example, Elon's put so much effort into Robotaxi and FSD as the future of Tesla. If this vote would have, you know, gone bad and went against him, it's basically the shareholders are saying, like, that's not the future we want, you know, FSD and Optimus. And Elon's like, what the heck? You know, they're voting against Elon, voting against FSD, voting against Optimus.
Crazy.
And it's like, yeah, yeah, right? But this vote, I mean, it's great. It's amazing because they're saying yes to Elon, yes to FSD, yes to Optimus. We like everything. And shareholders, and in a way, institutionals kind of almost followed retailers in a way, you know. I think what was it, Vanguard? I think it seemed like they might have changed their vote, or, you know, they voted yes kind of a bit last minute. But I would imagine, like, yeah, if there wasn't as many retailers, then it might have been a different outcome. So yeah, definitely, I'm very happy about what happened, you know, how it turned out. Yeah,
for sure. Shout out Alexandra Mertz for driving a lot of that effort too. That, I mean, it's, and I'm glad she got recognition at the event too, because that made a difference, you know, based on, you know, it definitely made it a lot more, in my opinion, it made it a lot more significant, the gulf between yes and no. And I think that the message that sends to what you just spoke to, I think it really, you can feel it. I mean, if you really think about, like, the Tesla investing thesis for the last 2 to 3 years, it's been really, it's, to me, it's very reminiscent of like 2016, 17, 18, 19, where it was a lot of noise around, oh, what's going on with the company? Look at all these terrible variables that are going on. And the long-term got lost completely. Mm-hmm. And now I think after this investor meeting, to your point, there's this reinvigoration of the Tesla retail sort of community and the story arc of the company that's a lot more like, okay, we put this thing behind us. The risk of Elon not being at the company has been diminished greatly. Now it's about, you know, and you could see the tone in the investor meeting too. It was super Robotaxi optimist, sort of like, here's what we've done, but here's where we're going, and check this out, right? Kind of putting the carrot out there for everybody. So it's, I think Tesla has done a really good job reframing how people should think about the story. Now it's up to the masses to buy into it. And I think that's just going to be extremely dependent on Tesla's execution, specifically on Robotaxi in the short term.
Yeah. I mean, it does. There are a lot of, I think, similarities between now and I think maybe 2017 to 2019. I think one of the similarities was back in 2017, 2018, 2019, the big bull case for Tesla was, you know, the Model 3 is going to come. It's going to make Tesla profitable. And then after that, the Model Y. But people just didn't believe it. I mean, and that's the interesting thing. It actually had came. Like, for example, I got my Model 3 early January 2018. And so I had all of 2018 to drive around this Model 3 and to test it out, to show how, you know, to see what kind of product it was. But the stock is just in the dumps, right? All into, right, mid-2019. And so it's almost as if, like, the reaction of the stock, but also, let's say, big money, it doesn't believe it. It doesn't believe the Model 3 is going to happen and reach scale and profitability, even though it's right before their eyes. And they can test drive it. They just won't, you know? They just, like, they'd rather just be late, in a sense. It's similar to FSD. It's almost like the reaction toward FSD right now with big money, it's so similar. So it's like, I don't even test it out. You know, I don't believe it. Just I'm going to wait until it works completely well, and then I'll be late. That type of attitude. But then you have people who are driving it right now. They're like, wait, I had no interventions for my last like 3 or 4 drives. It's like driving me in all these places. And yet Wall Street refuses to add any valuation to it, you know, and they'd rather just wait and see. It's like, it's super interesting. And I think the longer this happens, it's just going to be a more interesting opportunity, you know, for people to get in. Yeah.
I agree 100%. I mean, there's so many parallels, and it's, you know, it was funny hearing Elon talking about that at the investor meeting. You know, he was talking to investors institutional investors in New York. And he was like, hey, have you guys tried FSD? And they're like, no, you know, we haven't tried. It's like, yeah, maybe you should. And I wonder, you know, what's the correlation of big money being in big cities that are always taking Uber that are like, they don't even have the chance to hop into that FSD or like, you know, their lives don't revolve around that, which is weird because if you think you're going to put that much money at stake into your funds, shouldn't you understand the product? You know, yeah. Shouldn't you understand what the company's doing? And I don't know, man. What I've been talking about on my channel with that is I feel like the markets won't give Tesla credit for FSD in earnest until it shows up in the P&L consistently. And there's a very clear uptrend in revenues, and the margins are what everybody's assuming, which is going to be SaaS-like or maybe even higher. Who knows? You know, so yeah. I don't think the market is going to. And I think the other variable too is because the solution that they're, you know, it's a novel problem that, and they're taking a novel solution on a novel problem, right? Self-driving cars have never been done before in earnest at scale, the way Tesla is doing it. You have players like Waymo that they're able to do in very small geographical areas in the United States, as an example. You have some, you know, players in China like Baidu and Pony AI and those guys that are geofenced, and they're taking this, I'll call it traditional approach to solving self-driving. But then Tesla's like, nah, $2,000 of parts between the, you know, inference compute that we installed 6-7 years ago in the car, 8 cameras. We'll develop an AI brain to go out there and, you know, figure out how the car should drive. And then when people hear that, and they hear somebody who loves to overpromise and underdeliver with self-driving technology, I understand why they would be sort of in the camp of let's wait and see what happens, prove it to me in paper. But to your point, then the opportunity for people that actually are willing to test the product and almost obsessively, you know, seek out information, how the competitors are doing, it appears that there is this opportunity now that's presented itself, but it's super, super dependent on Elon, Tesla specifically, executing against their goal of making vision only works. And so, you know, if the exponential continues, it seems like that's going to happen. You know, it's inevitable, unless there is some sort of unknown, you know, unknown limiter that we don't understand with the approach that they're taking that somehow is going to cap the progress. And maybe they don't reach, you know, 50,000, 100,000, 1 million miles per intervention, and they're capped at like 10,000 or 20,000, which then, you know, raises the question, is it really that scalable? But, you know, I don't know how to answer that question.
So, yeah. I mean, how close do you think we are to Tesla Robotaxi rolling out? Are we like 1 year, 2 year, 3 years? Or I mean, what's your kind of rough guess?
I think it's likely that they'll have some sort of a small market, or, you know, a market or two operating in the next 12 months, perhaps as early as at the end of this year, maybe somewhere in Florida, Nevada, California, sort of these self-driving friendly places in the United States. I could see that happening. But it's more, yeah, I could see that happening. Honestly, I could see that happening just because if I take my own experience and I think about the places that I drive that I know are super controlled and FSD basically has 100% success rate, I'm sure those exist somewhere in the country that Tesla has data for that says, okay, SF, like Omar whole Mars, you know, he puts out a ton of content of just, you know, flawless drives over and over again. And each update that comes out gets better and better and better. And then if it's exponentially improving and they're coming out with better hardware with Hardware 4, and they're coming out with a solution that's specific for that, you know, with a Cybercab, whatever that car is going to be that they're going to release on 8.8, then it stands to reason. I think it's a logical conclusion to say they will likely have something within the 12 months that's highly controlled, and they'll be able to generate revenue from that service. Now, I don't know, and sort of what the strategy is going to be. I don't know if it's going to be like more like Uber or a Turo, or more like just buy the car and the car drives you around. That I'm still trying to figure out exactly how they're going to execute that plan. But I think we're close. It feels close. I mean, it's like just driving the car. It's like I have real world data. I get in the car. My wife wants to use it now. She didn't want to use it before. Now she's using it. That says something, right? And there's all these examples of other people doing it too. What do you think that's a reasonable expectation? How are you thinking about that?
I mean, I think first off, it's very clear to me what Tesla's strategy is. They're doing a ride hailing app. I mean, it's You know, you open up the app, you call the car, it comes to you like Uber, but without a human driver. So, I mean, that's their model. I don't think it's Turo or any, you know, borrow the car or anything like that. But I think there's a tension where if you release it too early before it's ready, even a pilot area, and you get into some crashes, and let's say people get hurt, it's like really negative, just press, and it's a bummer. I think what Tesla wants to do is they want to release it when it's ready, when it's significantly safer than human drivers, but they want to release it in a way where it could get a lot of data quickly so that the data can speak for itself. If there is crashes, then they go, hey, wait a minute, that was one crash, but that was out of 1 million miles, right? They could point to the data to offset any bad PR or the hyper-focus on an injury or an accident. But if you do like a small area and you're like, oh yeah, that was one crash, but it was one crash out of 10,000 miles, people are like, what the heck, you know? Like, you don't have the data to back it up. And so there is some benefit, I think, to waiting a bit until you can do a big release and get the data and then, you know, have that offset any kind of bad PR from any accidents. But I mean, yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting because I think Tesla has some visibility in terms of when that crossover is going to happen into kind of this super safe, significantly safer than a human driver. My hunch is it happens, you know, around the 18-month mark, maybe by the end of next year or something, around there, plus or minus 6 months or something. And how Tesla chooses to choose its markets and roll out, we'll see. I mean, yeah, it's going to be definitely interesting to watch.
So out of curiosity then, why do you think they are doing the 8.8 event this year? Do you think they would wait about that long before they release the product and sort of let the kind of hype die down? How are you viewing the timing of the event versus when they're going to have the full-on release?
Yeah, I mean, there could be, I mean, a pilot, but okay, so let's think through this. If they do 8.8 and they release a Robotaxi, obviously, and let's say Elon says, we're going to roll out a pilot area, you know, with Robotaxi. It's possible that with the first pilot area, you actually have the Robotaxi cars remotely monitored by a human driver. So for example, let's say there's 100 Robotaxis in Chandler, Arizona or something, right? You actually have 100 people. Like each Robotaxi is individually monitored by a person. So it goes around picking up people, but the person has like, you know, all the screens, has like a, you know, a steering wheel remotely to control the vehicle and any problems. And so what happens in that case is you get the rollout, you get to use Robotaxi, the new vehicle in an area, but you get the safety of, you know, of a human driving, because you are using human drivers, but they're just remote human drivers, right? And it could make sense because you have a new vehicle, they built in all that, you know, kind of capability to be remotely controlled and all that stuff. Maybe that's the idea, you know, do a year of that or so, you know, pump out a few thousand or 10,000 of these Robotaxis, humanly remotely controlled, driven and stuff, and then slowly wean off the human remote driving capability as your data and miles go up, you know, without interventions. And what are your thoughts about that?
I almost wonder if it would be like, you know, do you think there is a path for them to do, say, like just Model 3s and Model Ys on hardware 3 or 4 and just release the driverless sort of network, set it at driverless prices, but then use internal resources to actually physically put somebody behind the steering wheel and pedal to make sure it doesn't do something stupid? You know, I wonder if that's another strategy too, because I know Waymo and Cruise do that. And Chinese players do that as well. Like with the initial rollout, they'll put a physical person behind the steering wheel and pedal. And that might be worth, you know, like it's not like the action, you're not actually paying for the driver. Tesla's eating the costs to ensure that they have something that's not going to cause major issues. And I think the complexity of having maybe a person doing it remotely at all times, I think it just makes more sense to pop in the car at that point, right? Unless they're able to say, okay, 10 cars per person or 100 cars per person or whatever that is. And like you said, wean it off. There's opportunity there to do it that way too. But I think, you know, I'm wondering, so do you think the current fleet will be part of that network too? Or do you think this is a cyber cab only thing? It's a new product.
I think if they do the remotely controlled and monitored thing. I think it's CyberCab only. And my reasoning is I think the CyberCab will have some special features like that just make everything easier. Like you can have, you know, automatically open doors, closing doors. Like it's just gonna be a better experience. And if you think about the optics of this. So you have robotaxis rolling up, but there you have Model 3 and Model Ys with human drivers overseeing. You know? It just looks like kind of, it looks kind of lame, you know? It's like, that's not no robotaxi. It's like people are like, what the heck, you know? You're just testing out FSD.
Here comes
on me,
Elon,
right?
Scamming you again.
This is fake, right? But if you actually have robotaxis and it's this cool stainless steel cyber cab come up, the doors automatically open, you get in, and there's no human driver, and it's taking you places, and you have, let's say, 1,000 on this one city taking you, you know, everywhere, but they're remotely monitored and controlled. That's pretty cool still. Like that looks like robotaxi, you know, and it just feels like a shorter step to remove that human driver than to actually place human drivers. I don't know. That's my kind of take. We'll see that. I'm sure maybe Elon will probably announce some of these plans or his ideas August 8th or so.
The only reason why I bring up the current fleet is so the mock-ups I've done, again, these are mock-ups. Mm-hmm. They don't have to be official. Like the ones we've seen with the app, there's the Model 3 and the Model Y. Like it's the existing cars that are in there. And the one video that they had at the end of the shareholder meeting last week, it was like a 30-second clip of a woman hailing the Model Y. Then the Model Y pulls up, and then right before you can see into the cabin, it freaking cuts out. And then she gets into the back seat, and a whip, you know, it just goes away. And then on the app, it's, you know, had things like set your temperature, set your cooling or heating on the rear seat, your music, all so on and so forth. So I don't know if that's indication, you know, and some of the rhetoric and some of the things that Elon has been saying is like, you know, you just flip it on you add a bunch of cars to the fleet of self-driving. And so does that imply that the current fleet will then be added or not? It's going to be very interesting to see. And if they don't, I'm curious to see how owners are going to feel with, you know, because I know some people probably bought their cars with the assumption that they'll be able to add it to the fleet of self-driving. So I'm curious to see if that would cause any like PR issues, you know?
Yeah, I mean, this is not like the real, you know, full robotaxi rollout. You know what I'm talking about? Is this just the pilot project in a few cities? I don't think people will be too worried about it. I mean, it's just, you know, Tesla has to start somewhere. And then, regarding the app demoed, like 5 years ago at Investor Day in 2019, they actually had a ride hailing app that they were demoing to investors. And I was like, looking at it in person, an employee was showing me the ride hailing app where you press the button, the car comes. They've had this app going for 5 years.
Damn.
So it's something that is very, very polished. And so I take it with a grain of salt that a Model Y comes, a Model 3. I don't know. It's just something that they have working. We'll see. We'll see how it rolls out.
I think the overarching. Yeah, go ahead.
You got to think Elon Musk has some plan, you know, that he's thought through that's very interesting. But anyways, what were you saying?
No, I was going to say, I think the overarching takeaway, though, is it, regardless of what they use and regardless of like how it's perceived, the true separator is that they have the ability to manufacture self-driving vehicles, you know, at $20,000, $25,000, $15,000 COGS, whatever that is, at millions of units per year, where they can operate basically anywhere with enough data. That's the separator, right? So regardless of how they execute against that, that becomes the investing thesis for somebody like yourself and I, and then, and whoever's like sort of investing in the company. And then that, like, who else can do that? I don't, like, there's literally nobody else that can do that today. Maybe that becomes the case as training hardware and inference compute becomes cheaper over time as sort of that stuff ramps up and data collection ramps up and stuff, but it still feels like it's a giant advantage because, you know, there's multiple variables that you have to sort of, you know, wade through. You have to be able to create stuff at scale. Then you have to be able to have your training compute and your inference compute and the data collection and the execution and the app and the pricing, right? So it's like a bunch of different variables that go into it. That's why I think, you know, that's why I think Tesla's so well positioned. And I'm sure you do as well. It's such a unique strategy. It's been in the works for, again, 6-7 years. And it seems like we're finally on the cusp, and everything coming out of the company is now sort of redirecting everybody's attention to this, right? There's like a mindful sort of thing that's coming out of Elon that's saying, this is where we're going. This is where we're going. And then the thing that's going to power this thing is going to power the thing that's going to be able to walk on legs and change everything, right?
Yeah.
And that one,
yeah.
forget it.
Yeah. I mean, I've been thinking about this concept of how important is the first mover advantage for Tesla in robotaxi. And a lot of people don't give it much, you know, like value as a first mover. They think others will come in and, you know, just copy the technology. In a few years, they'll have robotaxis as well. But there, I think there's a case to be made if what Elon is saying is true, where the interventions between, like I say, between 10,000, 20,000 and 100,000 miles, like eventually you're not going to have an intervention for like 100,000 miles or longer. But those interventions are super important and valuable because that's the only way you know how to make the system better, right? If you don't have that data, you can't get past that. And so the question becomes, like, if Tesla goes in, covers robotaxi market, like saturates it, has millions of vehicles out there, billions of miles, is continuously accumulating, and their product is getting ridiculously good, you know, continuously, a newcomer comes in and they can't get past a certain hurdle unless they have enough vehicles, like millions of vehicles on the road. But how do you get millions of vehicles on the road with your autonomous driving if it's not good enough? For people don't want to buy it because it's not good enough, right? It's inferior. Right. So you're in this conundrum where you don't have a good enough product to sell to get millions of people to buy it, yet you need the millions of cars to get the data to make it, you know, good. And so then maybe you just give up and just license Tesla's FSD. I mean, I don't see what other way you go. I mean,
I agree 100%. I mean, I agree 100%. I had Tasha Keeney from ARC on my channel yesterday, and I was sort of trying to pick her brain on what she's seeing from competitors in the space. And you know, and the one thing that's sort of a black box for me is the Chinese market, because, you know, unless you have foot in the ground, or like feet on the ground over there, I think it's difficult to really gauge what's actually happening there, what's going on. But it still feels like Tesla's approach will give it the most likely, like the best chance to get something at scale in the millions of units at the lowest cost per mile. You know, it's very, and it's like when I think about that too, it's like I get a sense of like, man, maybe I'm not doing enough research. Maybe I'm becoming too lazy in coming to this conclusion. You know, it's like, of course, there's got to be somebody else out there that's able to do this, because the opportunity is so massive. I mean, it's sort of prints money on its own. The second you can offer a combination of privacy, comfort, and lowest cost per mile door to door. Like, who wouldn't choose that, you know, versus everything else? Like, the opportunity is too great. But it really, the cost associated with the scale is what's keeping everybody else to actually get this thing to be adopted broadly. And Tesla's approach seems to be the only one. You know, it takes a lot more time and effort, and it's a lot more like gray and hard to understand because you're dealing with a sort of nascent technology in artificial intelligence. But that still seems to be the best approach to get you to where you need to go. So yeah. It feels gigantic. I can't find something that shuts it down. That's when I get worried, because I'm like, okay, am I do I have my blinders on? But I can't find it.
Yeah, I think what separates Tesla's approach with other approaches is Tesla is really relying on intelligence to solve the problem, meaning Tesla is relying on, you just get images, video. And if you have real intelligence, you're going to be able to drive safely. That's what humans do, right? We use our intelligence to drive through these environments. I think companies that are relying on, you know, LiDAR and other, you know, HD maps and all this other stuff to drive, what they're doing is they're saying that they're in effect saying that intelligence, like, we're not going to get, or that's too hard to get. So let's get all this other stuff, all these other things to rely on, right? This super accurate, you know, camera resolution or HD map coordinates, all this stuff, and we'll rely on that. But ultimately, like, that's not good enough. Driving is far too difficult to solve with that type of, you know, stuff. You really need intelligence at a high level. And so what Tesla is saying is, hey, we're going to go all in and we're going to try to build this crazy intelligence that will solve the problem. And it makes sense, you know, like if you really are not underestimating driving, you're going to need human level intelligence in that field of driving in order to solve the problem. And who else is you know, betting everything on that approach? And so, yeah, I think Tesla's going to solve China. They're going to be the first to solve India and big, crazy, you know, it's a mess out there, some of these roads in some of these countries. Yeah, yeah, but I think Tesla's approach definitely is the only scalable approach. We'll see. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. How crazy is it that, you know, Elon's exposure to OpenAI early on could have been the thing that allowed him to get on this path? Because it seems like without the knowledge of how neural nets and sort of artificial intelligence was going to develop long term, I don't know. I'd be curious to hear your opinion on that. Like, do you think him sort of getting OpenAI up and running in like 2015 or whenever it was with Sam Altman and those guys, do you think that was the window that was necessary for Tesla to jump on this band, like on this wagon so early? Or do you think they would have landed in this place anyway?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough one. I mean, so I think Elon was aware and cognizant of, you know, the early kind of neural net developments, and then also what happened with Transformers and all this stuff. So like the big thing was 2011, ImageNet redefined what neural nets could do with image recognition or basically image processing, right? And so that's kind of the big thing you needed to realize, because before that, everyone was doing LiDAR and that was the only way, right? So Elon was definitely, I think, he had the pulse on things and he made the right decisions. But I think part of me feels like OpenAI, like, I kind of feel like if he didn't invest and put all the stuff into OpenAI, that, I don't know, I feel like he would have figured something else out. I mean, it just feels like he trusted, you know, OpenAI, he trusted this group to do something good. And he wouldn't have to with Tesla and his other companies. But eventually what happened was he realized like he has to do something himself, you know, because it's too big of a field. But there was this delay that happened, right? Because, you know, he trusted OpenAI. So I don't know, we'll see. I think Elon is Elon, so he will make up the delay and he will like go for it. And I think he'll do a good job. But it's interesting. I mean, what are your thoughts on this whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is interesting. The thing that really boggles my mind truly is that they had the foresight to put a neural net inference computer in their car starting in 2016, 2017, well before they had the code or the stack or the approach finalized, you know, end to end, 6, 7, 8 years later, however long it's been. That blows my mind completely. And I'm assuming some of that could have been out of the research that OpenAI was doing, but you know, who knows how they came to that conclusion. But when I had James Dama on the show a few weeks back or months back, when he sort of helped me understand that hardware, you know, because in my head, I'm like, oh, hardware 3 must be capped. It's a, you know, a 6, 7, 8 year old hardware, you know, that's, you know, has been in the cars forever. They come out with this end-to-end approach that's going to be super game-changing, and it's probably taking a huge toll on an already old hardware. And it's like, no, you're thinking about this incorrectly. This thing hasn't been used properly for 6, 7, 8 years. They've been hitting the CPU hard with heuristics, and they've had this powerhouse of a sort of the neural net inference compute on the chip that they're not even touching. And now they're starting to touch it. And I'm like, okay, got it. So that really made me fully appreciate just how far ahead Tesla has been in their approach and their strategy to solve for self-driving, and how, you know, 6, 7, 8 years of being all in on this. This isn't like we just figured out end-to-end neural nets. No, like they had to design the chip and they had to set up the supply chain and they had to figure out how to get the cars to work and all the future generations of vehicles would be on the same platform, right? So it's like, it's the amount of foresight and just the lack of better words, balls to do that so early on and put it in every single car and essentially have $2,000 of dead weight driving around until very recently. It's just so, and if that works, that in itself is really the definition that really defines just how far ahead they are, because they are, because they chose to do that so early on, you know? So in theory, if we think about it that way, the way I think about it is like they have at least a 6-year head start on this stuff, because they in earnest started 6 years ago with their own chip in the cars.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking about how many years does Tesla has of a lead? And I mean, it's tough to say. I think because others aren't doing a similar approach as much. I mean, there are some companies here and there, but I think the best way I could picture is that if you start from scratch, and let's say you're a automaker that somehow gets it, or maybe let's say NVIDIA bought an automaker or something, or Google bought an automaker or something like that. They could put all the, equip all their cars with like an FSD type of computer, and then gather the data and start training it. And so basically, how long would it take to get to this point if you're starting from scratch? Yeah, I think it would take probably about 5 years or so to get to this point. But then, Tesla, who knows? Tesla might be way farther ahead. Their progression might even go faster. Who knows? I mean, there's lots of unknowns, ahead of what will happen. Yeah.
Yeah, and then the manufacturing scale, you can make a self-driving car that drives itself, no problem. You can make one in this case, but then who's got the factories to make millions? And that becomes a differentiator. It's like, okay, now I have the tool that's going to allow me to literally just cover the earth with self-driving cars. It's crazy, Again, but it's vision has to work though. Like all of this, like vision has to work. Vision has to work. But if it does, it's the... Yeah, they'll be playing from a very far leading position, like far ahead, for sure.
How cool is the Cybercab going to be? I think it hasn't been talked about enough that this robotaxi is actually probably stainless steel, right? It's folded stainless steel because it's cyber.
You think so?
That's the whole cyber thing, right? I mean, would they release a Cybercab that is not cyber? I mean, I don't know. What do you
think? I got flamed in the comments when I made that assumption, Dave. You better watch it.
I mean,
they're coming for you.
Okay. Let's get this out. If you're going to call it cyber cab, at least it's not going to be like all rounded and like, feminine. Like,
I agree with that.
Modern car shape. It's going to be a hard car. You know what I'm saying? It's going to be like, it's going to be a mean looking car. And so you're going to tell me that it has all these edges, and it's like this futuristic car using modern stamping with, steel and aluminum or whatever. I don't know. It just seems to me like cyber, you go with stainless steel. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think the, when I was sort of where I landed with that is I think the cyber is definitely the angularity of the car for sure. And there was like a still on the one video that Tesla put together to try to rally the troops to get, to vote for Elon's comp. It was in the first few seconds. And it looked like the front or back of this cyber cab. And if you've read the Walter Isaacson biography of Elon Musk, there's this one chapter that's dedicated to Robotaxi. And then there's a sort of a black and white picture of one of the mock-ups of what the Cybercab was going to look like, and it resembled a lot the back of that vehicle, sort of like the shape, the angles, where the slots were, sort of the protrusions in the body, and it was angular in nature. But when I try to bring this up with folks, people will say, well, stainless steel is going to be so expensive, it's going to be harder to manufacture. When I talk to Sandy Monroe, he says there's no way they're going to do stainless steel because there's going to be too much complexity. And, super cool, but you're much better off doing the other way. I'm like, okay, because I'm kind of on the same boat as you. Like, cyber's got to mean something unless they figured out how to do like angles and sort of these shapes that, with traditional methods, or maybe a brand new method, who knows? Maybe the game breaking sort of thing they'll have for this car is like, oh, we're going to do something that's even cheaper than stamping and sort of the traditional stuff. We're not even going to do the cyber stuff, like the Cybertruck stuff. But what's interesting about that, that I don't really see being talked about a lot. Like, Tesla's already at 1,300 cars a week with Cybertruck. What I'm saying? Like, and this is like a very novel way of building a car. And it seems like the ramp's going really well. So who knows? I think the key takeaway there is that this thing is going to be in the millions of units of in per year. The looks definitely going to be sick, but the separator, I think, is going to be super low, if not lowest cost per mile. I mean, it has to be because of the size of the car, most likely. Privacy, comfort, entertainment, and sort of like these luxurious features like heated and cooled seats. You know, you don't have to be on a bus or an Uber where maybe you don't really enjoy where you're sitting. Like, these are all variables that, you know, people pay extra for. And then Tesla's going to be able to have these luxurious features. It's going to come pick you up at your door. And the cost per mile to Tesla is going to be the lowest of anybody because they've yanked the driver. And it's an electric car, which has a lower cost per mile than a gas car. So now, like, the equation breaks. Like, the things that we would typically pay more for, now you're paying less for. And you're getting all those bonuses too. You know, yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, regarding the looks, I remember back when the Cybertruck was revealed. And I was there and people were expecting, like, you know, decent truck, et cetera. And when they when they revealed the Cybertruck, there was just a gasp. People were like, oh my, what the heck? Is this fake? You know, people were like looking at each other like.
And, what just happened?
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. By the end of the night, most people were like, well, it's amazing, right? It is the future. But I think it's possible that something similar could happen with Cybercab, where it's like, what in the heck did Tesla release? And then by the end of the night, you're like, whoa, this is the future. Because it's clear that Tesla is doing Cybercab because they're wanting to design something of the future. It's not going to look like a typical car, right? But if they succeed in that, you can imagine you're using the Robotaxi network or Cybercab network. You get and you see all these crazy Cybercabs, like things of the future going around the city. There's like, imagine how noticeable a Cybertruck is right now. Compare that and take the same type of thing with a Cybercab. You have hundreds of these like things roaming around downtown Austin or different cities around the world. Like, everyone's going to see it. It's like this advertising before your eyes. And this is like, I mean, compared to Uber and Lyft don't have their own vehicles. You know, you don't see like what an Uber, oh, there's an Uber, there's a Lyft. But Tesla's going to have these cars and everyone's going to say, oh, cool, Cybercab. You know, Cybercab. Like, it's just going to, like, they're going to be the only manufacturer, I think, that has that. Like, and they're many, many years ahead of any other player. Like, what other car manufacturer is coming up with this own futuristic design for a robotaxi right now? It's like nobody, right? Next 5 years, it's probably only going to be Tesla. Yeah, I don't know. I think Elon has thought this out. So, like, he's several chess moves ahead of everyone else. I mean, it's genius. Yeah.
So let me jump on that train of thought. Okay. So a lot of the things I've been hearing is, so I thought 1000% agree with you. These things are going to be in the millions per year in multiple markets, conveying that exact emotion. Is like, what this is cyberpunk, like literally the cyberpunk is happening. And then, you know, you contrast a Cybertruck to another pickup truck, because we're starting to see them more in Austin. And every time I see it, I'm like, damn, what the hell? That thing is so sick. And it's shocking, right? It just immediately your eyes get drawn to it. So that's going to happen at potentially 10 to 15 to 20x the volume long term, whatever the numbers are going to be, but significantly more, right? Why in the world, because I've heard this, right? And I'd love to hear your thoughts. Why in the world would Tesla then partner with a third-party ride-hailing network like Uber, Lyft, or whatever, when they can have that? When they already have their own app, they're already on, people are going to be able to download it on their phone. And Tesla controls the entire stack, the entire vertical. They control the costs. They're going to control the insurance, one would think, right? Because they have their own insurance stuff. They have all the data around crashes and everything. They have all the data around the self-driving. And they have an app. Why would they ever, I feel like partnering with an Uber or Lyft sort of, like it's like a silly move, because you're just basically giving up this gigantic advantage you're going to have. And you're essentially just allowing Uber or Lyft to put a markup on your product and, you know, sort of like take away the reason why you're building this whole thing in the first place is to offer amazing transportation at a super affordable cost so that everybody can access it, right? How do you think about that? Like, they must go with their own app, surely, right? They're not going to partner with Uber or Lyft. I don't think.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the advantage of the first mover. So if you are able to go into the market and you're able to undercut Uber and Lyft significantly, you know, like 30, 40, 50% with a better product, then people are going to flock to you. And that's how you can get your usage. And everyone's going to download your app, use you, you get that. But if you're second to Robotaxi, like no one's going to download your app. Like they're like, what the heck? You have a worse product. It costs more. It's like, I already have Tesla's app. Like, you know, you don't get any of that advantage. And so in that sense, I think it's fortunate there's actually the only competition is Uber and Lyft, but that's not real competition because it's like human driven, you know, networks.
Yeah.
And so Tesla's going into this vacuum of a network, vacuum of a market, and they're just going to suck it all up. They're going to suck up all of the brand, all of the trust, all of the advertising, you know, everyone's going to download the app and suck it up. And then you think second and third place, like they're just in this place that's been suffocated by Tesla's presence, right? And their cars are like crazy. They look awesome. They're like super safe. You can't even like aspirationally get there, you know, in a reasonable amount of time. They cost, you know, super cheap per mile. And you're trying to get a foothold in one city. You know, what's the likelihood you can actually take on Tesla in one city? You're going to have to spend a fortune to subsidize your rides in one city, just try to lose all this money. And I don't know. It's just, yeah, it's bad news. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like this is just going to break. Like it's the equation breaks entirely. It truly does. Yeah. Yeah. I've heard that from people before. It's like, well, Tesla should just add the CyberCab to Uber's network and then, you know, they can have the network effect from Uber. Like, why would they do that when the cost per mile is like 75% less than an Uber? That's crazy. Like why would you do that? Or 50%, whatever the number is, you're giving up your entire advantage. It's nuts.
Yeah.
Makes no sense.
Yeah. Uber and Lyft. I mean, oh man, bad news.
I wouldn't want to be an investor. Yeah.
Yeah. One other topic I wanted to get your thoughts on was Optimus.
Yeah.
So, you know, Elon threw out some big numbers, like 25 trillion.
Very small numbers.
At the shareholder meeting. So what are your thoughts? I mean, is he talking like way super long term? Like, you know, it doesn't matter anymore, like 10, 15, 20 years? Or is it something that actually matters? Like, are we going to see a significant ramp in the next 5 years? Like, when are we going to see millions of Optimus robots? Like, what are your thoughts?
I mean, the way he's talking about it, it's interesting because now he is starting to put numbers to this thing. Whereas before it was like a concept. It was, you know, it went from dancing suit to demos to check out these cool videos to, hey, we have two in the factories doing autonomous work right now. You know, given it's not going to impact the P&L in any way, shape or form for probably multiple years, if I were to guess. But now he's starting to like set the path for what the economics are going to be for this thing, you know, setting a market cap for the value of the bot, you know, within the context of him saying, well, we don't know what, you know, what will money be when you can just manufacture labor infinitely? Okay. So like, okay, that's weird. It's hard to think about. But I do think, you know, the bot, what the self-driving car and the bot have in common is that they're products that you don't need to do any market research to know if it's going to work, right? And typically in business, you know, like 80% of business use cases or like 80% of people that want to get into business, typically what happens is you're like, okay, I'm going to start a business. I think there's value here. Let me check out the competition. Let me check out the industry. Let me check out the technology. Let's see what's going on. Like what's happening, right? But the self-driving car and the bot, the value proposition is so stupidly obvious that all you have to do is just execute. And I'm going to say all, it's like in obviously huge quotes, because there's a gigantic amount of work and risk that has to be done or that has to be taken on in order to execute that, right? But in the case of the bot, self-explanatory. If you can build a robot that can do basically all physical human tasks, and it gets better over time, it's going to start with very specific use cases, like probably surveillance, you know, perhaps, you know, the pick up thing and put it down thing sort of function is common in factory settings. It's extremely common in warehouse settings, you know, where you're just moving material from one point to another. And so you're introducing this thing that's going to, over time, basically have no errors. It can work potentially 2 to 3 times longer than a human can on any given day. It's going to cost significantly less per hour to run, so on and so forth. So you get these compounding effects of a benefit that you're going to have with this technology, and that's just going to sell itself. And so the limiting factor. I was trying to figure out like what's the word limiting factor. Jordan Gisicki, becomes how many of these can be manufactured. Because the value proposition is so great. And then the more you make, the cheaper they become. And so the forcing function becomes stronger and stronger. And then the more you make that can make themselves potentially, the more they make, and it becomes cheaper and cheaper. And then it becomes, okay, how much energy do we have to be able to make them all? How many raw materials do we have to be able to make it all, right? And so it just becomes this really weird future to think about. You know, and it redefines sort of how we live. But I feel like that is probably a decade or two away, sort of that, what I just described. But once it becomes useful and once it starts hitting the P&L, I think it would be silly for the markets to ignore it, because it feels like Tesla would have a product. Again, it's just like it's robotaxi. That is generalized in nature, and it can be, it's sort of plug and play long term. It's like pick up car, put down, drive, and the bot's going to be pick up, put down, task, you know, and then, oh, I learned task, download task, know forever. It's like the Matrix, right? But you have a robot instead of a person. I don't see how that isn't the most fundamental breakthrough in human history. But again, it's like super dependent on execution, and it has to be useful, and there has to be a business case for it. But once it becomes useful, the business case writes itself. So I think the path there, once that starts hitting the P&L, it's, I don't know, I don't want to predict stock prices or nothing, but it feels obvious that if they solve it, it will print. I mean, it's going to be crazy.
Yeah. I mean, Optimus is, it's an interesting one because it has so much potential, yet the exact timing of when a humanoid robot will become useful enough to justify its price tag for a lot of people, it's, you know, there's some ambiguity in terms of the exact crossover point, you know. It would seem to me like once it crosses over to becoming useful, then that usefulness would just exponentially increase like no other, because you're riding on the power of AI and the advancements in AI. So you're just getting that much smarter. I would imagine, like, you know, the next year's Optimus, like every year, you know, forward, the model would just be so much better in terms of its AI and capabilities. And a lot of it, I guess, would be software updates, you know. And then you get the hardware updates every year you get some hardware updates, but probably the big jumps would be in every 2, 3, 4 years or so, right? You get this new, you know, big jump in Optimus capability hardware-wise, but every year you get a bunch of these software upgrades that would make Optimus just, you know, so much smarter and more useful. You're talking about, investors probably won't price this in until it hits their bottom line. But it seems like such a big market and such big potential. I don't know. It just seems like this.
Robotaxi. Where is it?
Yeah. That's true. I mean, you know? It just seems like maybe it will be a while. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. I just maybe, you know, I spend so much time thinking about this because it's like, you know, one of the things I tried really hard to do with my channel is like, I'm trying my best to be objective in nature, but also like really trying hard to not dismiss the advancements that are being done by Tesla specifically, because I think ignoring the advancements and what they're doing is sort of, it's not telling the full picture, right? And so I think it just comes down to the fact that perhaps most people don't believe it until they see it with their own eyes. It's just like, you know, and maybe the stock market is not a scientific thing. It's very, there's an art to it. There is like emotion to it. There is a human element to it. You know, the stock market is a human creation. So by default, it's going to have human elements to it. Right. And so it doesn't matter how, you know, potentially obvious something is or the trend of something that's telling you is like, hey, at the very least, pay attention. At the very, very least, pay attention because something is happening. And then that's when you sit down and, okay, research CEO, research team, research, you know, past history, research current things that they're working on. How are they performing in the market? So on and so forth. And then, you know, in the case of Tesla, you have check going down the list for years in the past. And then the sort of thing that they're setting in for the future, they're getting into these sort of, you know, I remember you put up this chart, I think like 3-4 years ago, of these like exponentials, right? You start with the EV, then you go with the FSD, you go with the bot, right? And so that's starting to play out. But, you know, for a cycle like myself and somebody like you that's so good at what he does, where we spend a lot of time sitting down and researching this, maybe that's what needs to be done for something like this to become a viable investment or to even have a thesis to be willing to do that. And perhaps most people or most money out there doesn't see value in doing that, and they're rather just let it come true. Oh, okay, cool. It happened. All right, now I'll jump in, right? Mm-hmm. And then hopefully people that had the foresight, if they're right, to catch this early, they're the ones that benefit from those folks arriving later. But it's something I've been trying to figure out for the longest time with investing. And I think that's just what it comes down to, is I think most people are just wait and see, prove it to me. I don't care how cool or how potentially incredibly world-changing it is. I need to see it before I believe it. And I think the other factor too is Elon probably hasn't done himself any favors by being so optimistic with stuff, you know? And that's not really a fault per se, but it does set maybe an expectation that says, okay, like, prove it to me, I'll buy in once you prove it to me. And it's like, Okay, if that's a dynamic, that's a dynamic. It's still dependent on them executing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. We've got, I think, some definitely interesting times ahead. We got August 8th, so just in, 2 months, actually. We have second quarter earnings will be interesting. Going to be an interesting year, and then we probably have another product review. I'm imagining maybe a Tesla van or something. And they got other variants. Yeah, I don't think they'll show it on 8/8, but maybe a different, maybe in the fall. Who knows? You know, some event or something, and perhaps some other so-called models, maybe variations of models. We'll see. I wanted to thank you for coming on the channel. I know wanted to congratulate you on being a new father. You
thank
hanging
you, man.
In there.
Getting as
sleep.
Best as we can.
Is your baby right now?
He'll be 3 weeks on Thursday. And thank you so much for the little gift, dude. It's so cute. Thank you so much. It was so nice of you to do that.
Yeah.
It was so nice.
I feel for you.
Yeah, we're hanging in there, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
The sleep is, it's not there. And my wife is like, she's bearing the brunt of it. Honestly, like, it's been so incredible watching her power through this. I've just gained a whole new respect for what she does. And it's an unbelievable time. I love it. I really do love it. It's really shifted and really framed what it really means to be alive. Like, what's why am I here? You know, I think it's had a very fundamental impact to me, very philosophical one. But boy, is sleep hard to come by. But that's okay. Say it gets better, so we'll see.
No, it seems like you have a great attitude. I'm sure you'll be a great father. Exciting times. All right, Farzad, take care, man.
Sir.
And I'll leave a link to your channel in the video description, so for folks that want to check them out, go ahead and do so. All right, see you. Bye.
Thank you, everybody.